Welcome to the Tech Policy Podcast. I'm Ashkan Kazarian. In today's show, we're going to talk about flight sharing. While sharing economy business models have changed transportation in many ways, the aviation industry has been a notable exception thanks to the outdated regulation that stifles such behavior. There is an Aviation Empowerment Act introduced by Senator Mike Lee that attempts to change that by updating and clarifying FAA rules that have held back the innovation. To discuss this bill and what flight sharing is, we're joined by Chris Koopman, Senior Director of Strategy and Research for the Center for Growth and Opportunity at Utah State University. Chris, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
So what does flight sharing even mean, and how is there any practice? Is there any precedent on this?
Yeah, so flight sharing is a practice that has been accepted by the FAA since the 1960s. So this is a private right of pilots that they've always had to share their flights with others and engage in pro rata cost sharing arrangements to defray the cost of flying an airplane. To be honest, flying is an expensive hobby. Right. So you can imagine buying an airplane being expensive. Renting an airplane is expensive. Maintenance and upkeep, takeoff and landing fees, fuel, de-icer if you're flying in the winter, all of these things add up. So you think a pilot who flies 100 hours a year, for example, could spend about $225 per hour when all those costs are accounted for. So it's flight sharing as a practice has enabled pilots to defray costs, especially considering the fact that to remain current, to keep their license current with the FAA, pilots have to fly a certain number of hours. They have to have so many landings and takeoffs per year, or they lose their license. So it's an expensive hobby, and to maintain your currency with the FAA, you have to continue to do it regardless of the cost.
So what does the current policy on that issue look like?
Yeah, so for decades, right, to understand where we are today, it's important to understand where we've come from. So since the 1960s, the FAA has explicitly accepted flight sharing, cost sharing arrangements between pilots and passengers. And actually, in the Code of Federal Regulations, 14 CFR 61.113 subsection C, it specifically allows pilots to be compensated for the pro rata portion of the costs. The question here with flight sharing is, how do those pilots find passengers, and how do passengers find pilots, right? This is where the sharing economy angle really comes into the growth of flight sharing platforms. But think of this more like couch surfing, less like ride sharing, in that the pilots have never made a profit off of these. They're barred by federal law currently from profiting, private pilots from profiting off of these arrangements, these flight sharing arrangements. So what federal law allows for now is pilots to find passengers, arrange a flight, and share the costs. That's it. Now, the practice of how they find one another is a different story, and this has been typically done through bulletin boards at airports, right? So if I'm a pilot and I want to fly at a certain time and I'm looking for passengers to help defray the cost, I would have to post a piece of paper on a bulletin board.
So it's Craigslist, but real life Craigslist in a way.
Yes, this is and this is what's been going on for decades, yeah. Right? Is the little tearaways, right? Where you post and you say flight on this date at this time to this place. If others want to join me, tear a piece of paper with my telephone number on it and give me a call. Right? You can see how inefficient that process is.
And kind of creepy, may I add.
It is a little creepy because you don't meet the pilot. As a passenger, you don't meet the pilot until you're there the day of the flight. Well, you get there and the guy's clearly
drunk,
not someone you want to fly with. then it's okay, I have to make new arrangements for my flight. That it can be difficult and cumbersome. And you think of all the transaction costs involved in that. Imagine, if you want to fly on a particular day as a passenger, you have to continue to go to the airport, go view the bulletin board and look on the bulletin board and say, is anyone offering this flight on this day?
It's 2018. Digital age has arrived. Can we have this bulletin board online?
Yeah, that's exactly what these flight sharing platforms did, is they brought this decades old practice into the internet age, essentially turning the bulletin boards into a smartphone app. So the way to think about these platforms is little more than digital bulletin boards or digital cork boards. That's all it was, is for passengers and pilots to post information, find one another, and then engage in those arrangements that the FAA has explicitly allowed pilots and passengers to engage in. That is those pro rata cost sharing arrangements. So the underlying practice hasn't changed in the internet age, but the apps have just made the process much easier. We're able to find one another and connect with one another in a much more efficient way that doesn't involve the sort of cumbersome process of going to the airport, doing those tearaways, calling, and then maybe finding out that the flight got canceled or something like that. The apps have really brought this practice into the digital age and allowed us to take advantage of the internet and the connectivity that provides.
But I haven't really come across an app. Do they still exist?
So in the United States, they've been all but banned. So the FAA in the 1980s issued an advisory circular that defined what a common carrier is. Now, this is the technical definition between a private pilot and a commercial pilot. So the license, the certification, everything is based on that pilot's interaction with the public. Are they holding themselves out to transport persons or property from place to place for compensation? That's the test that the FAA has used since 1986. So we're going on, 32 years of the FAA having this definition. But the problem is they've reinterpreted that definition time and again to adapt to new products or new offerings or new apps. So the FAA has done this on an ex post basis, right? So someone posts a flight online, let's say on their Facebook profile, and then the FAA says, well, actually, you can't do that. Or they post it on another.
So very reacting yeah, it's very innovation.
Much, yeah, the FAA has very much been in a reactionary mode on cost sharing arrangements, in that they will only define after the fact whether something is or is not rising to the level of a pilot being classified as a common carrier, right? That's the ultimate distinction here, is whether or not the pilot is a common carrier. So what you end up having is innovators who are creating a platform based on their current understanding of the FAA's interpretations, and the FAA, after the fact, changing those interpretations and saying that practice is now illegal, which is exactly what happened in the case of companies like FlightNow. So FlightNow is one of these platforms that sprung up and said, we can bring this practice into the digital age. And they started offering this connection service. That's all it was. It was basically a digital cork board for pilots and passengers to find and connect with one another. After the platforms had gotten popular, right, the FAA came back to them and said, actually, what you've done is you've created a situation where all of those private pilots are now common carriers, and they now need commercial licenses, and they now need commercial certifications, and the airplanes are treated and regulated differently, and therefore the apps had to shut down, right? It became cost prohibitive, right? Flying as a hobby is already expensive. Being a hobbyist commercial pilot is nearly impossible to remain current and keep up with all of the standards required for someone who may be only flying several hours a week or maybe a dozen hours a month.
Absolutely. And full disclosure, Tech Freedom has joined FlyNow in the litigation, arguing for innovation and the fact that this regulation was stifling the innovation.
Yeah, and so the story here of what has happened to flight sharing over the last, let's say, 5 years. So the platform was shut down by the FAA, and they sued, and they argued all the way up to the Supreme Court almost, right? And this is where Tech Freedom got involved as an amicus brief, basically making the case that the Supreme Court should hear FlightNow's arguments that the FAA is acting inappropriately in interpreting the rules in this way. Ultimately, the Supreme Court
did not grant cert.
So they said, we're not going to hear the case. And FlightNow is left with pretty much only one option, and that is legislative change, right? So Why has the FAA been able to act in this way over the last 30 years is because Congress, when writing the Federal Aviation Act, never bothered to define common carrier. The term common carrier is used in the Federal Aviation Act, but Congress never defined what a common carrier was, defined the term itself. And so the FAA has been given broad authority to define and then subsequently redefine over time what that term means.
And the Aviation Empowerment Act that was introduced by Senator Mike Lee from Utah does that, doesn't it? They codify a clear definition of what a common carrier is.
Mm-hmm. So in essence, the Aviation Empowerment Act does two things. One, it writes a statutory definition for common carrier. It says, okay, the test that the FAA issued, that they promulgated in their advisory circular in 1986, that will be written into law. So the FAA will be held to the same standard going into the future. And it also provides a safe harbor, if you will, for flight sharing arrangements. So the Aviation Empowerment Act says actually private pilots can engage in these cost sharing arrangements to actually define in statute a safe harbor for these types of arrangements, free from the FAA subsequently reinterpreting their rules and regulations again to continue to hold this innovation back.
So giving a clear definition of what a common carrier is, that gives an opportunity for small businesses and private pilots to know where the line is and operate within those lines. What would you say would be the benefits of such an approach?
Yeah, so the benefits of actually codifying the term common carrier and subsequently providing a clear area for these cost-sharing arrangements to occur without continued uncertainty as to the treatment from the FAA. That has a number of benefits, right? The first of which being it holds the FAA accountable, right? So it says these are the bounds by which you will be held to going forward, and you cannot continue to reinterpret your interpretations, right? That's basically what they've done is they said, this is how we're going to treat common carriers in the 80s. And they subsequently, through opinion letters, have regulated this practice over the last 32 years. So it holds the FAA accountable and says, these are clear bounds by which you can and cannot regulate this practice. For the platforms themselves, it provides certainty, right? So FlightNow, for example, built their platform specifically around the existing FAA interpretations, only to find out that the FAA was going to change their interpretations in the future. So it provides certainty to the platforms and entrepreneurs, innovators, to create new and better ways of doing things without the fear of reprisal or the FAA saying, well, we've changed our mind and therefore what was once legal is now illegal. And then finally, there's a huge boon to consumers here. So to think about aviation, that's most of our travel, right? Across country is aviation, right? So airplane travel, you think there's something like almost 7,000 commercial aircraft serving hundreds of millions of passengers a year, right? And there's about 500 and or so national and regional airports that these commercial flights take off and land at. But most of these flights fly routes from the east to the west coast, with some stops here and there in the Midwest, but fly over a country is called that for a reason, right? It's because airplanes typically
no one is there.
Fly over them. There
no
are
one
people
is landing there.
There.
Yeah, no, yeah, no one yeah, is yeah. landing there.
There are people there. They're just not being served on a regular basis by these.
So this will help the rural communities.
Yeah. So you think about what would unleashing flight sharing, right? Giving the certainty to these platforms to provide this service to passengers and pilots. What would this do? This has the potential to unlock 200,000 licensed general aviation aircraft across the country at almost 2,000 local and basic airports, right? So you're going from 500 airports to 2,000 airports. You're going from 6,000 aircraft to 200,000 aircraft, right? This has the ability to provide resources to communities that are currently underserved by the current commercial aviation system. So I'm at Utah State University in Logan, Utah, right? We're about an hour and a half away from the Salt Lake City Airport, right? That's really the nearest commercial airport that we can fly in and out of Utah from. Now, our house is 10 minutes away from a small airport with general aviation aircraft. You can think of using flight sharing to complement existing commercial lines, right? In that I might be able to find a general aviation pilot in my town, right? An hour and a half outside of Salt Lake City, that's willing to fly me closer to Salt Lake City. So instead of having to drive an hour and a half, maybe now it's only a 15-minute drive. And you see the way that these practices were being undertaken when the platforms were actually used, they were providing flights that were $60, $70 for a round trip in some instances, which, you know, is cheaper than if I were to try to Uber from Logan down to Salt Lake City, if there even is an Uber driver available at that point and willing to drive an hour and a half round, you know, one way. So 3 hours round trip, you might just say, I'm not going to take that flight or that fare. So for me living in Logan, and for people all across the, you know, in the West and the Midwest in particular, this is a huge boon to rural communities in that they're able to connect, with commercial airports, right? In a way that they couldn't under the current system. I mean, you drive, right? And you think,
I don't know how to drive.
That's an ordeal, right?
I'm stuck with either Uber or a train or asking for favors or a bus.
Yeah, and you think, you know, flying at an airport, like going through security and getting to the gate on time, like you already, that's a multi-hour process in some instances. Now to add another hour and a half on the front of that, or to say I'm trying to get from Salt Lake City to Denver, and now I have to drive an hour and a half down to Salt Lake City for an hour and a half flight to Denver, where I could maybe find someone in my local community who is a licensed pilot, who is willing to fly me from Logan to Denver, right? You can see that this just makes the process more efficient and actually makes flying far more feasible and affordable for a large swath of the population. Right, this opens up new opportunities both for work and travel, right? That people who, you know, I lived in DC for 6 years, right? To fly from DC to Philly or DC to New York.
Honestly, yesterday I had to drive from Dallas to DC. It wasn't great.
Yeah, right. I mean, you think even that, for example, right? Now probably you know DCA has a general aviation terminal, right? Like you could think of these flight sharing arrangements actually happening, you know, in DCA or Leesburg. Right now, your options, you're fortunate in DC. You have three airports you can choose from, right? Dulles, DCA, and Baltimore, right? Most of America has one airport.
Best case scenario.
And it might be a 45 minute to an hour drive away. More often than not, they're driving by, you know, smaller general aviation airports that might actually, in a world where flight sharing is not just existing, but thriving.
Accommodate them
and make life so much easier for people to make travel something that's enjoyable again for large swaths of America.
Mm-hmm. Then the question is this model safe? I would like to think that since this has been a practice with a physical bulletin boards, it's been used over and over again, and the safety level is approximately the same, if not higher, in this digital age where you can, if these platforms were back online, there's a way to leave reviews or share the experience using a certain pilot or a certain aircraft.
Yeah, so you can imagine the ways that technology will make this safer. So there are two parts to this. One is general aviation has been getting safer over the last 30 years, right? We've seen fewer accidents and fewer fatalities, you know, today than we saw in 1983. Now, the NTSB, the National Transportation Safety Board, looked at this in 2005, and their primary assumption is the decline in accidents and fatalities is mostly due to declining activity. We're seeing less general aviation activity today than we did in the early 1980s. And they seem to think that that's the explanation. Although a colleague of mine and I have dug into this data, and it's a report we'll be releasing in a few weeks, hopefully, And in controlling for all sorts of factors, what you find is that the decline in accidents and the decline in fatalities cannot be fully attributed to the declines in activity, right? We are actually getting safer. So this is already a safe
practice.
I would also say we have the European experience, right? So the EASA, so the European version of the FAA, when the FAA shut down this practice or these platforms, this activity, the European Aviation Safety Administration, they embraced it.
Wait, you're saying that Europeans are more pro markets than we are?
On this issue, they have embraced innovation in a way that the Federal Aviation Administration has not, right? So while these platforms were shut down in the United States, they were embraced in Europe. And the EASA actually partnered with these platforms to provide safety checklists, best practices, right? They became a partner with these platforms in saying, okay, we want this practice to continue and we want it to be safe. So we have years of experience of flight sharing happening in Europe and no reported accidents or fatalities at this point. There's no evidence that this practice is inherently unsafe or that general aviation is inherently a dangerous activity per se. And we have this European experience that bears this out, right? We have years where the green light has been given to these platforms in Europe and you're seeing them thrive. I mean, you look and there's, you know, over 1,000 bookings, 10,000 users, 2,000 pilots, right? This is a very robust market, flight sharing market in Europe of pilots and passengers connecting and this activity happening on a daily basis in Europe. And the regulators have taken an active role in facilitating the growth of this industry by saying, we're not going to shut it down. We're going to, as a safety agency, we are going to do our job and provide guidance and provide support to ensure that these practices remain safe.
How do these platforms make profit? Do they take a fee, a booking fee, or what is their model?
There are competing models, but yeah, it would be something like a booking fee or advertising on the platform, right? Like any other two-sided market, any other platform.
Like any average sharing economy platform.
Right. Or even, you know, Craigslist and others, they found ways to make profit. These platforms, right, are providing, you know, not only benefits to consumers and producers, they're finding new and better ways of making the practice safer, right? So something you mentioned before, the idea of like a pure rating system, right? Like in that digital platform, you can provide that. You can provide a rating to the passenger. You can provide a rating to the pilot. You can share your experience with others. You can overcome those information asymmetries that are inherent in that bulletin board on the wall that's the current practice, right? You don't know who you're dealing with until you're dealing with them. And there's no way to get that information unless you know someone personally that has interacted with them before. And the platforms are they're bringing all that information together and putting that information to use so passengers and pilots not only know who they should be connecting with, they know who they should be avoiding. Safer pilots are rewarded by getting, you know, more requests or more connections, while unsafe pilots aren't. Gives them an incentive to become a safer pilot, right? Sends a signal to them also that maybe you aren't as good as someone else and you should figure out why, right? All of this to make the overall flight sharing market better. And yet the FAA has basically shut all of that down and said they want to keep the world locked in the true sort of
1986.
Exactly.
What is the chance of this Aviation Empowerment Act passing and what is the timeline?
That's hard to say. So there is the Aviation Empowerment Act that was introduced by Senator Lee. There have been other efforts to make progress in this space. So the House version of the FAA reauthorization bill that was recently passed out of the House of Representatives included some language that would put the onus on the FAA to make publicly available clear and concise guidance as to what is and is not acceptable practices in flight sharing. And this would require them to provide examples of flights Where pilots and passengers can share expenses, flights where they may not share expenses, the methods of the communication that may be used, and the methods of communication that may not be used, right? Because ultimately right now the FAA is in a position where they're only reacting. So if you go to the FAA and you say, can I post my flight plan on Facebook? Is that okay? And the FAA would likely respond with, well, maybe it depends. How big is your
network?
Yeah, that's exactly the place that they've left pilots. And so the House version of the flight sharing language and the House FAA reauthorization bill would have the FAA provide clear guidance, and also it would commission a study that outlines the safety concerns and also the benefits of flight sharing. So that's moving along, right? So if at some point the FAA reauthorization is actually passed, that may be included. Now, it isn't clear that will be a positive step toward unleashing these platforms. What you might get is clear and concise guidance from the FAA that shuts down this activity, right? Because that still gives in the current system where the term common carrier isn't defined and the FAA really isn't bound by anything vis-a-vis regulating this practice, there isn't any guarantee that having them provide clear guidance means they will provide guidance that enables this practice to continue in any sort of real way. So that's where we are in the House. The Senate side is the Aviation Empowerment Act, which does take clear steps to define common carrier. It does take clear steps to provide sort of an area where flight sharing arrangements can take place without any sort of fear that the FAA will, on the back end, come back and shut those practices down. Now, the timeline on this is difficult to say, like anything else in Congress, although the FAA reauthorization has to occur sometime this summer. So there may be some movement over the next couple months. But like anything in life, it's difficult to predict the future.
Well, we are going to try anyway to make it better, though. Thank you so much, Chris, for joining us. And we're going to link to your work on this issue in the show notes. So please check them out. We hope you come back to our show in the future.
Thank you very much. And I'm always happy to come back to the Tech Policy Podcast.
You can follow Tech Freedom on Twitter and Facebook at Tech Freedom. Please leave us a review so others can find the show and we can also show our previous host how great we're doing.
The Tech Policy Podcast is produced and distributed by Tech Freedom, a nonpartisan, nonprofit think tank in Washington, D.C. To learn more about our work, make a tax-deductible donation, or find other episodes, find us online at techfreedom.org.